This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Brad Garrett is with us live this morning, crime and terrorism analyst. And we want to start with New York City Mayor Eric Adams, Brad. He's been indicted. It was handed up. It's unsealed as of this point, but it's incredible. The police perimeter around his home, agents showed up at the mayor's residence to serve a summons for him to appear in court. They took his phone as part of a search, which his attorney said was not necessary. He would have turned it in. How unusual is this?
Well, it's not actually that unusual in public corruption cases, because typically, and I assume that's what this is, based on the people that who had their phones taken, based on the fact that the mayor, some of his major confidants like the police commissioner and the chancellor over the whole school system in New York City have both resigned, that it has to do with some corruption aspect that tends to go to bid rigging, to rigging, to taking money from businesses or foreign countries for favor, to things like, you can imagine in the city of New York City the number of permits you need to build a skyscraper. It would be a lot. And, in previous cases, people have been charged with, like, paying inspectors money to expedite the approval of a permit or something like that. So it's going to be some version, I assume, of what I just talked about, among other things, of course. But, you always want to seize phones immediately when you can, because if people keep them any time at all, they can alter them. So I get why they took his phone this morning when they served the summons. But we'll see. I think it sounds like this is fairly far-reaching, again, based on the number of people that have been touched or implicated some way, allegedly, in this case.
What do you think of how this is handled? And obviously, it has to be handled a certain way, but maybe is it time to rethink this? You have the mayor of the largest city being indicted, and nobody knows the charges. You got this huge scene around his house, and everyone's just kind of left questioning, like, what exactly is going on here? Is there a way to be more forthcoming and still within the law?
So, Brian, one of the issues that, and they'll unseal the indictment soon. The only reason you keep it sealed, it's not going to be, I'm going to guess, because of classification or national security, but who knows. But typically you keep these sealed because you need to finish the investigation. Once you unseal an indictment or talk about it before, you get sort of all the vital pieces of information you need from phones, from computers, from witnesses, or people who have information about whatever the government's alleging. You need to get as much of that together before you ever release an indictment, because people will start talking to other people. They'll start trying to get rid of stuff. So that's fairly common. But as I said a minute ago, I can't imagine that much longer they'll keep the indictment sealed.
All right, I want to ask you about what's going on in Letcher County, Kentucky. The sheriff last week charged with fatally killing a county district judge in his chambers. This seems like a scene from the Wild West, Brad.
It's pretty bizarre. You're talking about a super small county. I mean, there's 20,000 people in the county. The county seat, Whitesburg, where the shooting occurred in the courthouse, has 1,700 people. So this was much like where I'm sure everyone knows everybody else. So the judge and the sheriff apparently have been friends for 20 years. The sheriff used to be this judge's court bailiff, in other words, the deputy assigned to court security. They work together apparently professionally regularly. And I had read, I don't know if it's true, they actually had gone to lunch the day of the shooting. Steins reportedly, that's the sheriff, comes back middle of the afternoon and says he needs to see the judge privately. Now, keep in mind, you're in the courthouse. The courthouse is busy. In the hallway outside the judge's chambers are attorneys, are law enforcement, you know, typical people you would see in a courthouse. And Steins walks in, apparently locks the door, and reportedly shoots the judge 8 times and then leaves, I assume, walked by all of those people, goes downstairs and turns himself into the local police, and then pleads not guilty. I mean, there are really some bizarre twists and turns in this case that just aren't clear yet. Why did the sheriff pick that location? I mean, obviously he wanted a spectacle. And of course, he's now gotten one. But we'll see where that goes.
It's just an incredible story. And Brad, thanks for joining us this morning to talk a little bit more about it. Brad Garrett, crime and terrorism analyst, with us live here.